Thank you, Portland.
That was a clip of today's press conference held by Don't Shoot Portland. The audio for the entire press conference can be found on our website at kboo.fm.
Tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Personnel Committee meets on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We're broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today in the Zoom is Jackie Dixon and David Haywood. Hey, guys.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hello, same.
Thanks for joining us. So tell us about your backgrounds and your current positions as educators.
So I have been teaching in Portland Public for about 15 years now. And I currently work in a program called SAGE, which is part of the DART school programs. It's a treatment setting, and it is for girls who have been sex trafficked that are in treatment recovery. And it's a residential, so typically they live there for about a year and go through treatment. Portland Public has a couple classrooms there, and really happy to be there. I also have experience teaching at Roosevelt for many years, 7 or 8, I think, and Marshall before that. So most of my teaching experience has been within Portland. I've been involved in union work for about 4 or 5 years now. Kind of started out doing the building rep thing with DART and working with the NEA Hispanic Caucus. because I had a few friends, shout out to Adolfo, who kept bugging me about like, hey, we really need you. You should come over here and like work with us. We're working on a lot of the same stuff. I know you'd love it. But I was really hesitant initially to get involved with the union for many reasons. And I'm currently like an OEA state delegate, as well as I sit on the executive board for PAT, and I'm co-chairing our racial equity committee. So that's a little bit about my background.
I
teach
You don't have much going on, Jackie.
Thanks. try to get some trips to the beach in there too, the coast. I teach language arts and ESL typically with DART. I also have the privilege of teaching ethnic studies and sometimes Spanish, so it's just a little different, set up differently than our other schools.
And you, David?
So I work as a graduation mentor in the Beaverton School District at Beaverton High School. I'm new to education. This is my second year. So my resume is not quite as extensive as Jackie's, but maybe one day.
Great. Well, welcome to both of you. And David, any, have you, you're relatively new to Beaverton, but have you checked out your union? Any union involvement at this point?
So I am a member, but I don't actively participate. Long-term goal. In the short term, trying to raise an autistic toddler. So that's taking up most of my time right now, but I have it in my sights and on the horizon.
And what union is that? That's not OEA, is it?
It's OSEA.
OSEA, great, okay, thanks. So the Black Lives Matter protests have been going strong for a couple of months now. Have you all been participating in these protests? And have these protests impacted or inspired you for some of the work that you're doing?
Absolutely, I mean, feel like I can't get enough of it. I feel like we're in the middle of a revolution, and how could I not protest? So early on, you know, in the Black Lives Matter protests, I was attending a lot of the protests organized by Rose City Justice and Don't Shoot PDX. They were very inspiring in a lot of ways. Most recently, I've been attending also some of the things going on downtown around the Justice Center, you know, with the federal agents here. And for the most part, I've tried to really stay connected to Black and Indigenous-led protests intentionally. I want to be in those communities and really following the lead of community organizers, because if we're marching for Black lives, we clearly need to follow the lead of Black community organizers there and Black youth. They've been inspiring in that, like, they've kind of rekindled this hope that I think I've always had, that, you know, we could dismantle racism in our school system and really break things down and change it and create a different system, just because the awareness is clearly so much more vast. I feel like people that you typically wouldn't see at protests, you know, 10 years ago, 7 years ago, 5 years ago even, are showing up now. So like the diversity at the protests, both in age and culture and race, is just really inspiring and leaves me with a lot of hope. And our youth have really stepped up and led a lot. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, they have.
It's beautiful. I love it.
So yeah, the protests and all of the activism surrounding initially the death of George Floyd, but then the action by the Portland Public School System to remove SROs from the school district is what inspired me to start the petition that I started. I have not been to any protests. I have some people in my bubble who are in the high risk category. And I understand that not everybody gets the opportunity to social distance. A lot of my students can't, but I can, and I'm taking that opportunity to try and protect the people that are really close to me. But I have been trying to do as much as I can from home, with the petition, donating to organizations like the Black Resilience Fund, talking to people in my life that maybe aren't quite on board or don't understand what's happening in the world right now, because it is worldwide.
Great. Thank you both. We invited you on the show to talk about racial justice and specifically the ways in which racial justice issues play out in our schools and impact our students, particularly our BIPOC students and their families. Jackie, you're on the executive board of PAT and the chair of the Racial Equity Committee in PAT. Could you tell us about the work that's been done to address racism in our schools?
Well, I can tell you about what PPS has done in the past and what we're trying to do now with PAT. So short history of PPS racial equity work would be in, I believe, 2016, with the new superintendent, they decided to cut the entire equity department, which also meant cutting all racial equity PD that educators were receiving at the time, which clearly has an impact on their how they engage with students and the world, you know, and impacts students of color. Since then, we've heard a lot about what Equity 2.0 is going to look like. So for PAT, we're working on providing some PD this year, and we've applied for a grant through NEA to help us provide that PD. Unfortunately, because we're a union, we're not the district, so we cannot require all of our members to attend that PD, but the hope is that folks will utilize that professional development. And we haven't quite decided the tracks for that, but we are talking to a few different equity facilitators and kind of doing some test runs is what I would call it. So I would really like to focus on decolonizing education, wellness, what is it to educate, even like starting with the basic building blocks and like what is white supremacy culture, pretty much like an equity 101 for all members. We're also going to be providing racial equity PD specifically to our reps, because something we're hearing from educators of color, and we have been hearing since I've been in the district and seen in the data, is that we're not recruiting or retaining educators of color as we would like to. So we need to think about supporting them. As far as our students, I gotta say, I feel like with the district just cutting all the equity TOSAs and not providing that for students, my colleague and last year, my co-chair in racial equity, Nicole Watson, ended up doing a lot of restorative justice and racial equity work with students in many schools. Although it wasn't necessarily written in her job, she was on a full-time release doing equity work for the union, it's naturally where things went, right? Because if you're student-centered and if you're focused on your baby's of color and you're seeing that they're suffering and they need you to be there for them and there's not anybody else there to provide those services, of course you're going to provide those services. So some of the work she did last year was panels with students at different school settings around racist incidents that had happened, like I'm thinking of Wilson in particular. And so sometimes those were community panels where we invited like very student-centered. So students ran the whole thing, students talked about their experiences, and then the audience, which was community members, families, organizations, oftentimes school employees as well, got to engage with them. And then there was action plans that those students took. A lot of schools in Portland, like Roosevelt comes to mind, have very strong student groups, but they're relying on one or two, you know, a few staff that are clearly engaged in this work and wanting to support them. And there's not like a system for that that we have in place. So I really would like to see that. What are some other goals? We have a lot of goals this year. So we're going to be doing, like last year, we put on the Black Lives Matter Week of Action, and that also had many student-centered panels, some film screenings and discussions, opportunities for teachers to come together and create curriculum. And we're hoping to continue all of those things, as well as affinity groups for educators of color. So just to provide a space for us to all come together. Curriculum's a whole nother conversation, but I feel like we really need to embed ethnic studies in all social studies courses, but then come to a clear agreement with the state and with the district around what does that actually look like, roll that out. So, like, I've been talking a long time, so I'm going to stop there. I could go on and on.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of great work is happening. That's awesome. And David, you started a petition, you mentioned this already, regarding school resource officers or SROs. What motivated you to start that petition? And can you tell us how eliminating SROs is a step toward racial justice?
Yeah, so I was motivated by the actions of Portland Public Schools in removing SROs from their district. What I came to find out later is that that has been years in the making and wasn't just a swift decision by the superintendent. So there's been a lot of groundwork that was laid. But in that moment, that was what motivated me. And it made me think of the Black Student Union at my school, who I work with, and those kids who are directly harmed by the presence of SROs, because at the end of the day, you can call them SROs, but they're still cops. And the data and lived experiences of communities of color just demonstrates that cops still discriminate in schools in a way that harms people of color. And you know, the hope is that if we remove them, it'll help interrupt the school to prison pipeline in a small way, but hopefully a significant one.
Great, thanks, David. So Jackie, there's obviously a lot of work to be done regarding the ways white supremacy is interwoven in our school system, SROs, discipline, curriculum, funding. I mean, the list goes on and on, right? So do we need to prioritize, or what do you think should be our most pressing demands right now in this moment?
Absolutely, prioritizing. In this pandemic moment, I really feel like we need to focus on community needs. And so that might be, that has to be really thinking outside of our box that we think resources. You know, when we think about access to resources in schools, we have to think beyond like textbooks or curriculum at this point. We're talking about do families have enough food? Are families able to pay rent? Are families having access to healthcare equitably? So making sure that we're providing those types of social services and making sure our families have access to them. Equitable access really needs to be our primary focus in this moment. I would also say, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement and returning to schools, we do need to prioritize PD for educators. At this point, it's like your students, especially your BIPOC students, are going to want to talk about race and going to want to talk about their experiences, and we owe it to them to center their experiences. And we have to take some accountability there as a district and a union and make sure that our members are equipped with the skills or the training to have those conversations and not do further harm. So I really think we do need to prioritize that as well. Really like reframing what do schools look like. So what is, when we say community centered, what does that mean? How are we engaging in culturally relevant pedagogy that actually centers and values cultures outside of white, you know, mainstream culture?
Yeah.
There's lots of ways to do that, but yes.
Yeah, I really like hearing you say that. I feel like, so, you know, pretty much any at any other time, any other year, it feels like in education, it's like the train's already left the station. So just, you know, hop on board and, you know, if you can maybe get the train to, you know, swerve a little bit, take a slightly different track, that's fine. But the train's moving, it's down. And right now it feels like maybe there's a time where like the train is actually in the station and we can actually talk about why do we even have school and what are the biggest problems in school that we need to readdress, or that re-envisioning or recreating. David, do you have any anything you want to add to what Jackie said as far as prioritizing or anything?
I mean, it's hard to prioritize all of the above. If possible, but if I had to pick one from that list, it would be school funding reform. The practice of local tax-based funding for education is evil, in my opinion. The fact that the communities that are already disadvantaged by dint of their just how much money they have. And then layering on top of that, the disadvantage of having schools that are hobbled by lack of funds just seems to be adding insult to injury to me. And so that would be like a ground level reform that I would like to see, a federally equitable funding reform for all public schools in our country.
You're here. Yeah, definitely. We are running out of time a little bit, unfortunately. So I think I'm going to see if we have more time for more than one question, but I'm going to skip to the last question that we have here for you. There have been 69 days of protests in Portland. How long the protesting continues, we don't know. That's kind of out of our hands. But how else, other than protesting, how else would you encourage educators and others to engage in the fight for racial justice in our schools and communities? I mean, that's a big one, but what do you think?
I would encourage educators to get involved in researching policies or finding out, I think the point David brought up about funds, right? We can look at that at the ground level, and we can also look at that like at the federal and state level. What are the policies that are in place that are kind of going unmonitored? Like when we talk about recruiting and retaining educators of color, for example, educators can engage in research and understand, like, does their district have a policy around that? What does it look like? What is actually being done to recruit and retain educators of color? Why are folks leaving? If 20% of educators of color in Portland Public chose to leave last year, why? So asking those questions, and also staying engaged in these community conversations around defunding the police and reallocating funds, I think is definitely our place. People often will say things like, well, why don't you just teach? Like, it's not your place to do politics. Or I feel like if we go back to basic teacher school, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, our students are not able to self-actualize and reach their potential and engage like we want them to engage in any type of curriculum unless their safety is first taken into consideration. They feel like they are loved, they belong, and so we've really just got to reframe. How are we doing school? Are we really centering kids? What does it look like to actually engage in trauma-informed care, to engage in culturally relevant pedagogy and taking a look at that. So looking at your own practice and reflecting, which for some folks might be like, I'm gonna engage in a book group, I'm going to join my school's equity team, I'm going to go to some student-led protests and just chill out and don't say anything other than thanks for having me here and wow, you guys are doing an amazing job. So decentering ourselves and listening to youth, particularly youth of color, and what do they need? What do they want right now?
Yeah, so for me, I would encourage all educators and anybody in the public school system to just keep the ball rolling and just to keep pushing, because at some point the protests will end and people will want to have things to quote unquote go back to normal. And we need to ensure that they know that the fight doesn't end once the streets become quiet. And there are so many ways that Jackie cited to continue doing that. But I think one really important way is to continue to push for reforms in our curriculum. You know, there are a lot of people who think that pushing for reforms in curriculum is a way of displaying a kind of bigotry toward American history or white people. And we just need to keep pushing to show students, especially our students of color, that their experience is heard and that their experience matters and is valuable. And because if we don't do that, then we will keep producing citizens who believe the same thing, that any evidence or history or literature to the contrary is an affront to their identity. So we just need to keep going.
Thanks. I like that point of making sure that we're thinking about all of our students, sort of reframing what is history, what is culture, that it all exists, it's all valuable, and to sort of dismantle the hierarchies that white supremacy creates. So super important. Well, we have to end here, unfortunately. I could have asked tons more questions. Thank you both for being here, Jackie and David. Thank you, Stephen, my co-host, and I'm gonna thank Jamie Partridge, because hopefully he will help us convert this interview so it's radio ready. All right, good night, everyone, from Labor Radio. See you later.
Thank y'all.
Good night. Bye. Thank you.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Oregon ranks nearly last in the nation for access to drug treatment, yet about 1 in 11 people in Oregon suffer from a substance abuse disorder. A new initiative, IP44, the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act, has qualified for the November 2020 ballot. If Oregonians pass IP44, it will expand access to treatment and recovery services instead of arresting